Today, we've got an industry expert with a lot of experience on Walmart, TikTok Shop, and Amazon who's going to be giving us tons of cool strategies, including some that no one has ever talked about on this show before. How cool is that? Pretty cool, I think. Sellers have lost thousands of dollars by not knowing that they were hijacked perhaps on their Amazon listing, or maybe somebody changed their main image, or Amazon changed their shipping dimensions so they had to pay extra money every order. Helium 10 can actually send you a text message or email if any of these things or other critical events happen to your Amazon account. For more information, go to h10.me/alerts. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Serious Sellers Podcast by Helium 10. I'm your host, Bradley Sutton, and this is the show that's completely BS-free, unscripted, and unrehearsed, organic conversation about serious strategies for serious sellers of any level in the e-commerce world. And now we are having, for the first time on the show, Delaney. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bradley. Happy to be here. I think it's long awaited on my side, so glad to be joining you today.
Yes, yes. Now, we first met, at least, you know, I've known about you because we've worked with Vendo a lot in the past. And I think I met you first at the, might have been Puerto Rico, at the Billion Dollar Seller Summit. And I looked across the room, I was like, she looks like a white flip, like me, which for those who don't know, that's a half Filipino and half American. And that's what I am. I don't look like it. She does. And so I was like, are you just what Filipinos do? Like there's that jokoy joke where it's like, oh yeah, my mom goes Filipino when she sees somebody. But I did that exact same thing. I'm like, you Filipino and American? And she's like, yep. I'm like, oh, ako din. Me too. And anyways, we bonded there. And I was like, all right, a fellow Filipino American in the Amazon world, we got to have you on the podcast. So no, that's not the reason why I had you on the podcast. I heard, you know, from your boss that you are an A player and know your stuff. And I'm like, that's the kind of person we want on the show. But anyways, lady, enough about me and my rambling here. Let's just start with where, I mean, we met in Puerto Rico, but where in the world are you right now? Where do you live?
Yes, Bradley, I'm out in Los Angeles, so actually not too far away from you today. Cool. But speaking of the Filipino-American, yes, you're right. It seems like my mom's genes might be stronger than your Filipino side there.
Yep,
but
yep.
I got the sinigang and the adobo in the fridge. Don't worry, I'm more.
Yes, than yes.
I there we go. But yes, I'm out in L.A.
Awesome, awesome. Is that where you were born and raised?
Yep, born and raised in L.A., lived for a few years out in New York, but made my way back here, so...
Where do you live in New York?
I lived in the city for a few years and then also in the upstate New York area. So
nice. I lived in Brooklyn myself for a couple of years. Where'd you go to high school in LA?
High school, I went to Burroughs High School out in Burbank.
In Burbank. Okay, yeah. Nice. And then how about college?
College, Hamilton College in upstate New York. So a really, really
never heard, like very rare that somebody gives me a college or university I have never, ever heard of.
Yeah, there were 1,800 kids in the entire school, so super small community, small and tight.
Well, what did you study?
I studied economics.
Interesting, interesting. Now, when you graduated, did you work at all into there, or did you already find e-commerce by that time, or what's your journey to e-commerce like?
Yeah, so I actually got my start over on the Walmart side of the business, so working for Walmart.com as soon as Walmart had acquired Jet. So I was part of that group of individuals and then found my way on the brand side for a few years working.
What did you do at Walmart?
So
you might have told me that, but I forgot it.
No. I managed the beauty category there. So on the .com side, worked closely with the store merchants and grew the beauty channel.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. And then how did you get... to the Amazon kind of like side of things.
Yeah. So then from there, ended up shifting over to the brand side for a few years, worked for a beauty brand, and at that beauty brand, managed all their retailer.com channels. So Zulily, eBay, Walmart.com, Amazon.com, etc. So a bit more full circle. And now here at Vendo, leading, of course, the Amazon team, as well as TikTok Shop, which is one of our newer channels that we launched just a few months ago now. And then, of course, as you know, Bradley, you've had some of our Walmart.com teammates on the podcast as well.
Okay. And then what do you specifically do? Like, what's your specialty, I guess? What's your day-to-day? I know you actually do a podcast as well, but outside of the podcast, what are you doing for clients?
Yeah, so I'm the director of Amazon strategy, so I lead our team of account strategists here. But in terms of what Vendo does, everything from P&L and forecast management towards direct management of the Amazon channel, managing advertising, marketing, etc. I'm more on the strategic side, so a lot of what you would look at from listing optimizations, SEO support, ranking impact, and really just understanding what strategies we're implementing to hit brands' top line and bottom line goals, both on the 3P side and our 1P side of the business through Vendor Central.
Awesome, awesome. All right, we're going to start broad here and then go narrow as we go on. But, you know, since you have, you know, your company and you yourself have dabbled, I guess you could say, in a lot of different marketplaces, be it, you know, Amazon, Walmart, TikTok Shop is kind of like the top three. What's just your state of the union in 2024 about the trajectory of each of these? Are all still going up? Is one skyrocketing over the other? Is one of them going down? One of them staying flat? What's your outlook for this year?
So I think as far as trajectory, TikTok Shop has the greatest potential. Just being their affiliate network is so strong, and the platform itself is extremely simplified. So it's not hard for a lot of sellers to join TikTok Shop right now. And just in terms of their affiliate network, we obviously know that Creator Connections on the Amazon side has been in beta for quite some time. But I think TikTok Shop has the upper hand when it comes specifically down to affiliate, just because of the ease of the platform and the fact that you can set these targeted collaborations per item, per creator that you reach out to. So Vendo has an in-house influencer and affiliate team, which we're able to leverage, of course, but that allows us to glean great insights on the targeted collaborations and the open collaborations on TikTok Shop. Amazon specifically, I mean, we'll see. I think they're always on an upward trajectory given the amount of data that they have access to. And just as far as shipping and logistics, they're always ahead of the curve there. But we have to look out for specific categories. If we look at platforms like Temu, which I know generated a ton of buzz after the Super Bowl with how much they're investing in different ads. Fashion categories, we know that Amazon referral fees are dropping in some of those categories. So we'll see, right? I think Amazon's going to probably have to take some action across categories if Temu starts to undercut price. And we'll see if Amazon also starts matching there. And then Walmart.com's a silent killer. I mean, they have their stores that they're able to leverage. So with their store specifically, that opens up a ton of opportunity. I think that oftentimes a lot of Walmart.com sellers don't realize that, you know, if they are or if they have the potential to sell on the 1P side of the business, that opens up a whole new avenue with online pickup and delivery. And many times Walmart.com sales are grossly underreported because unless you're investing into Luminate, you don't see those OPD sales naturally. So you might think the channel is smaller than it is, but it's really larger than what it appears to be on paper, just given the level of data that Walmart actually has versus what it discloses.
All right. Now, I know you're a little bit out of the Walmart game, but I'm going to ask you a Walmart specific question because I just want to see how relevant this is. This is something that I've been telling people, but my experience is about 6-7 years old now. So I used to work for this company that does supplements, and they're kind of like a famous company. They would do infomercials and things like that. And I was their sales manager. And people don't understand the size of Walmart brick and mortar, because it was like, you know, like I was so proud of myself. I grew their Amazon sales from like 500,000 a year to like 3 million. I would have Walmart PO, and that was for 20 SKUs, by the way. I would have Walmart POs for their one SKU that were like in the $1 to $2 million, just because of how many stores, you know, Walmart has, et cetera. So it was like, it dwarfs Amazon, you know, unless you're like a huge whale on Amazon.
Right.
Now, that being said, like a couple of things I did was I started a couple of products on the brand on Amazon, and then I moved it to Walmart. First of all, we already had a somewhat of a relationship with Walmart. And then Walmart.com buyer, you know, saw that I was dominating one of the subcategories. And they're like, all right, let's bring this. I don't remember what it was called, but it's kind of like what Amazon calls a vendor central or something, where it's like, hey, we'll buy this from you. So that's shipped and fulfilled by Walmart because it's doing well. And they were like, cool. And then they're like, hey, it started doing well there. And they're like, hey, let's take this and let's add this to brick and mortar. And that's when obviously, you know, sales blew up. Now, for me, that's what I tell people of that story about like how, why, even though maybe if you just start something on Amazon or Walmart, you know, sales could be 10 to 1, 15 to 1 Amazon or Walmart. But the reason to start on Walmart is if you start, you know, making some waves, you can start selling to Walmart. And then potentially you can just get in front of a buyer because you can't, you know, just come in off the street and say, hey, I've got this cool new product. You know, would you just put it in Walmart brick and mortar, you know, unless you got connections. Is that still valid in 2024? Like, is that kind of like the process that could potentially, not guaranteed, obviously, but that could potentially happen?
Absolutely, 100%. And I think that is sometimes what a lot of brands make a mistake with on Walmart.com or just in Walmart stores in general, is they go to Walmart stores too early. And if you go to Walmart stores too early, then that really does a number to your brand from a profitability standpoint. So that's why Walmart Marketplace is a great avenue for you to start, because you can even get SAM support, which is a strategic account manager on the Walmart 3P side of the business, who can help you and make sure that you're pulling those levers and growing your brand on Walmart.com to go to stores. So yes, Bradley, 100%, a great avenue to start. And looking at, again, just Amazon versus Walmart strategy, it isn't just let's go bring all of our Amazon SKUs over to Walmart, because both algorithms are getting a lot better from a pricing standpoint at identifying different prices. So we've seen pricing down to the price per ounce standpoint. So it doesn't even matter sometimes if you're launching completely different UPCs, they're still matching. So it's really important that before you launch on Walmart.com, even if you've been selling on Amazon for quite some time, you think about maybe differentiating different pack sizes or just different flavors of your product. That way there is a difference there that you can grow a completely new set of products.
Before we get to your specialty, which is Amazon, let's talk a little bit about TikTok Shop. It's a different marketplace in that, you know, and I've never sold in TikTok Shop, so please feel free to correct me if any of what I'm saying is wrong. But to me, it's different because it's not like something that you could do traditional keyword research. You know, I know there's some tools and Helium 10's working on some things now that can analyze hashtags and things like that, but you don't really have control over like what, you know, what's necessarily indexed or, you know, how, getting to page one. It's like so just dependent on just the virality of something or, you know, like a famous influencer showing it. Is that kind of like what you see? It's kind of like completely hit or miss where you have the least amount of control over your success. As far as on just regular TikTok Shop, obviously you have control over how you advertise and how many impressions you get. But as far as just a post going viral and getting a lot of sales from it, do you feel like you have not as much control as on other platforms, or is that changed?
No, 100%. You're correct in that as well. I think that's why the affiliate network is so powerful, but is also, you need a defined strategy there. You need to know your exact demographic. You need to know which subset of creators you're looking to target based on their engagement rate, their follower count, etc. And you really need to do a deep dive into their content to make sure that they fit the brand, because you can reach out to as many creators as you want to through there, but at the end of the day, if they're not going to generate sales from your brand, you're now giving away free samples, and that could impact your bottom line. So I think, yes, as a whole, definitely from a ranking standpoint, I think TikTok Shop's going to evolve in that sense. When you're setting up items, there's specific keywords that they want you to be focusing on, but those are all of the benefit-driven keywords or the main claims in the listing. So it doesn't appear that from a ranking standpoint, those hold as much weight. It's literally how many pieces of content are you pushing out and how is the engagement of that content. So it is incredibly important that you have a solidified content strategy, and TikTok Shop allows you to, there's like a get inspired section, and you can see a bunch of content that's currently working on the platform that you could pull from in different categories and get ideas on how you can be capitalizing on that for your brand too.
Moving to Amazon, I'm not sure if you have experience in this much at all or if you've looked into it, but last night I, for the first time, kind of like took a deep dive into the new inventory placement fees that are coming. I was just seeing here and there like some, I don't want to say horror stories, but people getting really scared, like, oh my goodness, my shipping's going to be 2x, mine's going to be 3x. I'm like, what, for reals? So I went, and what I did was I looked in my own account. And by the time this episode is airing, it's going to be in full effect, so I'm sure we'll know more. But I was like, yeah, there's a shipment that I had sent to one location only. I didn't choose to. Just Amazon, you know, had me do it, I guess. It was like 100 units of some coffin shelves, right? And it was like 77 bucks or something, because it was like shipping from San Diego to LA.
Right.
And so, you know, like, it's obviously 77 cents per unit. And then I was looking, all right, under the new world, if I ship to one location in California, which is obviously my preference because it took probably a day to get there, right? And it was cheaper. It was like a 68 cents per unit charge. So I was like, wait a minute, it is like double, you know, what it is. Like, have you looked into this at all and started like thinking about for your clients, like what you're going to have to suggest to them to do, or if they're going to have to change the way that they send replenishment?
Yeah, I mean, most of them right now don't send to a single location, but it is very category dependent. And so that's what we've seen. So for some categories specifically, there's actually a savings attached to it. But others, like yours, of course, Bradley, you're seeing a steeper charge there. So I think it does 100% matter. And that's something in which we keep P&Ls on an item level and are updating those P&Ls whenever a new FBA fee is introduced, whenever a new inventory placement fee is introduced, just so we can understand the impact of some of these newer fees. But majority across the board, we are seeing increases due to the inventory placement fee. So it's just something that now a lot of our brands that do ship to a single location, they're really going to have to evaluate whether that is worth it for their business or not.
2024, what is different than a couple years ago, or even than last year? Like, what are you and your clients having to do a lot differently? There's a lot that's the same. You know, hey, keyword research is keyword research. Sure, I you know, there's some people who are predicting changes that might happen when Amazon rolls out new AI stuff. My personal opinion is that may or may not happen. And even if it does happen, I still think traditional, like, you know, keyword research and stuff is still going to be important, because you still have to let Amazon know what the product is. But aside from speculation and stuff, just what are you having to do differently nowadays, whether it's advertising, whether it's listing optimization, whether it's A+ content, whatever, that you weren't doing last year, maybe a year ago or 2 years ago?
The biggest change, I think, has just been the continued focus on profitability. I think that into last year as well, profitability was at the forefront of the business, where maybe a couple years ago, it was more so focused on top line growth. But now, really, as brands diversify their channel strategy, they're understanding that, you know, with some rising Amazon fees, their bottom line maybe doesn't look as good as it did a couple years ago. And that's where, on the Vendo side of the business, we're really looking at LTV to CAC ratios, because a lot of our brands might be more hesitant to discount.
I know what that means, but explain it to everybody else out there.
Yeah. So LTV, lifetime value, CAC, customer acquisition costs. So you want the LTV versus CAC ratio to be healthy. A lot of agencies will probably tell you a 3-to-1 ratio is more so on the healthy side, which basically just means that what you're paying to acquire for a new customer, they're generating at least 3 times that rate in their overall lifetime value. In other words, they're coming back to repeat purchase from your brand. And I think that as we run promotions and we participate in some of these tentpole events, we're getting more and more pushback from brands who don't want to engage in, let's say, a Prime Day or a Black Friday, Cyber Monday, or any other tentpole moment that exists for their brand. But we're able to pull reports in which we analyze, okay, how many new customers are we generating during these periods? And then for that cohort of new customers, what is their lifetime value in the next 6, 9, 12 months? And in many cases, that metric is healthy. And if you look at Helium 10, Market Tracker 360, Search Query Performance, Keyword Tracker, you'll see that, you know, in Keyword Tracker, your non-branded keywords are experiencing an increase in overall organic rank during that time. Because of that increase in organic rank, Search Query Performance, your purchase share is growing on that particular subset of keywords. And then you pull back a larger time horizon. And for many of our brands, looking at Market Tracker 360, they're doubling overall market share, while brands that aren't participating are decreasing in market share and for extended periods of time. So thanks, Bradley, for all the innovation on that side, because that has helped tremendously. But it's really understanding what are the dynamics in the market, and when we're not participating in these events, how does our market share change?
Okay, well, let's definitely talk in a little bit about some Helium 10 tools like Market Tracker 360. But before then, you mentioned like Search Query Performance. What's your best use cases for search query performance and or if you're using it, Product Opportunity Explorer in Amazon, because I think it's so cool that Amazon is releasing so much more data than back in the old days. Some people say, what, Helium 10, aren't you scared? I'm like, no, it's great. Like, every time Amazon releases something, it helps us make even our tools better and actually validate some of the things that we've always shown. So we love it when Amazon opens up new data points. So how are you using, like, what's the you could probably have a whole episode about search query performance or OX, but maybe the top, like, one or two things that you think sellers can be getting value out of?
Yeah. So on the search query performance side, it's really identifying, first and foremost, we look at, where is your click share greater than your impression share? This is going to be your probably subset of keywords in which there's a ton of opportunity. There just might be a visibility standpoint. You're not showing up. Let's see what we can do in terms of optimizing our listings for these keywords, looking again into Cerebro and doing a reverse lookup there to see what are my opportunity keywords in which I can improve my ranking on page one for. And then tying that into, okay, once I do that, how is search query performance gleaning insights into changes in my overall click share, impression share, add to cart share, purchase share, and what does that look like over a prolonged period of time? So a lot of people might look at, okay, I want to look at a larger subset of keywords to go after, but really you should narrow this down to probably your top 5 to 15 at the onset subset of keywords that you're tracking regularly in Keyword Tracker and also in Search Query Performance to see how that changes. So in Search Query Performance, again, just understanding, is my purchase share growing on these terms as I prioritize them more? And then putting that back into our ads and where am I ranked in terms of my top of search impression share for these particular terms? Is my top of search impression share now growing as I, one, invest more, and two, am more relevant for these terms? And then three, let's look back at search query performance and see how my purchase share is growing. And then on the Opportunity Explorer side, I think that's a great tool, just understanding, okay, how saturated is my niche? Looking at the top 90% of clicks, is there opportunity in this niche? If my brand is looking to launch a new item, that's where we see the most value in it is, okay, how many products have been launched more recently within this niche? What does the opportunity look like for pricing? What does the opportunity look like for reviews? Where do we need to be at within that particular niche to be at the category average so that our conversion rate is benchmarked within the category average? And then I really love the review aspect of things. So being able to really update your content to see positive review sentiments, negative review sentiments, and how are we tackling some of these things that are going wrong within the category as it exists. So as you said, Bradley, we could talk about it for probably three episodes, but that's the basis.
Good stuff there. I'm just waiting in anticipation for it to be available like in the API. Then that's going to allow Helium 10 to do a lot more even fun things and combining it even more with Helium 10 data points. You know, like, I love, you know, looking at, for example, what is your impressions compared to the search volume, you know, because theoretically the impressions should be a little bit higher than the search volume. Cause if you're showing up at the top of the page, maybe in organic and in sponsored, you know, you would have that more, but then it's like, all right, let me bring in the exact two graphs of sponsored and organic over the last week or month. And like, oh, okay, this is why it's not where I need it to be. I need to improve, you know, there's just like so much fun stuff that could definitely happen. Now, another tool you mentioned, Market Tracker 360, and a lot of, you know, or some of Helium 10 users out there might not be familiar with that tool, because it's actually one of the first tools that I think Helium 10 has that's kind of like really for large sellers or agencies, you know, like you guys. Like, almost everything Helium 10 has, you know, we've got billion-dollar companies like Lego or something using it, and it's just as applicable to a brand new seller, you know. But this is one of the probably the first tools where I was like, wow, you know, like, I'm not sure I need this personally. You know, like, I'm not that huge of a seller anymore. Like, maybe only, I think I might have only done like 500,000 or 750,000 last year. I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure this is for me, but some people, just like yourself, like, really get a lot of use. So for most people, they've never even seen what it does. Can you just briefly talk about how you guys use Market Tracker 360 and how it helps you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. So in Market Tracker 360, you can either choose a subset of products. So oftentimes you're going to choose your competitors, or you choose some top keywords within the space. Those are the two most heavily used use cases that we use here. So we'll choose a bunch of the non-branded keywords within the space, and we'll put those into Market Tracker 360. And then what it will do is it will pull a bunch of competitors and also your product that are relevant for those specific keywords and literally build a market for you. So using this market, you can see what is the percentage of overall sales that each competitor is generating, as well as what does this track back to a dollar value. And yes, we have spot checked that multiple times, and it is pretty accurate there in terms of the sales that it's pulling. So what we do is we'll include that in our product launch phase. When we receive a new brand into the Vendo pipeline, we look at, okay, how are they situated within the market right now compared to these top competitors? And of course, we know who the top competitors are. The brand has shared that with us. And then you can dive deeper into different filters that you can set. So you can say, okay, I only want to filter this to a title that includes this keyword. Like, let's say the title includes protein powder, or it is situated in this specific category or subcategory. That way you can really define that market even more so. And now you don't have as broader of a set of different competitors in that market. It is a lot more specific to your overall market. Or if you only want to benchmark it towards like five competitors versus the entire market, you can do that too and exclude specific competitors from showing up there. So that's the basis of Market Tracker 360 and how we use it. But then it goes even further deeper into there's different keyword insights that you can see through Market Tracker 360 and where are those competitors now winning? How has the ranking of those competitors on the organic and the sponsored standpoint changed with time? So that's probably my favorite tool in Helium 10, Bradley.
Nice, nice. All right, what about the regular side of Helium 10, which you know I know you have a lot of experience with? What's your favorite tool? And then my secondary, and its use case, and my secondary question would be, if you had a wish list of your top thing that Helium 10 doesn't have currently, doesn't have to be about Amazon, could be about Walmart, could be something about TikTok Shop. What would be the number one thing if you were like, hey, I can be the Helium 10 director of product for a day, what would you make our team get started on working for you?
Yes. So I'll start with your first question related to my favorite tool. It has to be Cerebro. Just going back to the roots, looking at the time tracker function that you guys have more recently added, it's probably been not even a year yet, right, Bradley? But that tool is extremely powerful because, again, if you have a brand that experiences a ton of seasonality, you can go back to those specific periods in time to see how you were ranked on specific terms as well as how your competition is, and also what are seasonal terms that you need to be taking advantage of. And I think that is often something that a lot of brands miss is, hey, there might be 500 searches per month for this particular keyword now, but 3 months from now, there's going to be 5,000. So what are you doing with that information? How are you getting ahead of it from a creative standpoint? How are you optimizing your listings to make sure that those specific keywords are being highlighted? And then on the advertising side, your competitors probably aren't going to know to be winning on those specific keywords either. So you could get the upper hand by understanding, I need to be ranked on page one at this exact moment of time on the top half of page one, ideally in the top 3 to 5 slots. And once I can get there, then I know that when this search volume hits its peak, I'll be the competitor that's getting a majority of the conversion share there. So that's got to be by far my favorite aspect there. And then apologies, Bradley, on the second question related to what I would like to see from an agency side, my Vendor Central experience probably speaks to including a few more Vendor Central aspects in there, just because from a purchase order standpoint, that is a huge area that we would leverage. But honestly, I think from an FBA standpoint, I would have to say forecasting, because I think that inventory management is a huge challenge for a lot of brands. And forecasting allows us to better understand what our projections and what our inventory demand is going to look like throughout the year. And then my second one, if we're throwing things in here, would just be variations. So I know like with Inventory Protector, you can update maximum order values and things like that. If we could directly change variations in Helium 10 or really be able to decipher, like maybe even submit cases for variations that are wrong, some more technical things there, but all things that I feel like would be extremely powerful because that's where a lot of time is spent trying to update things that maybe Amazon is not updating even after multiple cases.
Cool, cool. Now, before we get into some of your final strategies of the day, just, you know, if people want to reach out to Vendo Commerce, you know, guys, one of the easiest ways is just go to hub.helium10.com and type in Vendo, which is Spanish for I sell. So whoever made that company name is a genius. And you can reach out to them there. But if people want to follow you or reach out to you, how can they find you on the interwebs out there?
Yes, you could find me at Delaney@VendoCommerce.com. And as Bradley said, also have a podcast that I know Bradley will be joining me on in a couple weeks, Vendo Velocity, as well as on LinkedIn. I'm on there, Delaney Dumundo.
A couple, maybe quick hitting what I call my 60-second strategies. By the way, that's also something that comes from my Filipino side, because as we know, that's how our mothers or grandparents would call us when they're trying to, talika, you know, come over here. But anyways, for everybody else, that just stands for a 60-second tip. So what is a couple 60-second tips or strategies that you can talk about that our sellers can implement?
Yeah, so from a more data-centric standpoint, make sure you're leveraging both Helium 10, Search Query Performance, and Product Opportunity Explorer. Tons of insights in the way in which you're telling a cohesive story for your brand. If you combine those tools, they're not meant to be used in silo, they're meant to be used together. But also from a competitive aspect, using the video placement aspect and sending videos, putting videos on your competitive ASINs is something that's really fundamental, but at the basis of it is just more organic visibility for your listings. So again, you can add your own branded videos onto competitors' listings within the video manager. A lot of brands don't do this, but they will show up if the full video stack is not filled by your competitors. So something to look out for. Also, from a cross-sale standpoint, a lot of brands aren't currently leveraging things like targeted cross promotions in which, you know, you buy one product and you get 5 to 10% off another product, or the add an accessory widget. A lot of brands think that, yes, that's probably only a SaaS core function if you are investing in that program. But we've seen through filing of multiple cases, you can have that add an accessory widget pop up there. And then just in terms of Prime exclusive discounts, I know that sometimes and more often you're seeing that when you add SKUs and Prime exclusive discounts, they might be getting rejected. So for that, I would suggest creating a new SKU. And what we've seen that is that if a SKU is being flagged specifically for FBM or for internal policies, then you can create a new SKU, add that new SKU instead to your Prime exclusive discount, and it will still run because that history won't be tied to that new SKU. So those are a few things, but on a larger basis for a 60-second hack, I'd say, or not even hack, but tip, is to know your P&L. And Amazon has a lot of different tools. Helium 10 has a profits tool to help you understand that, but you do need to understand how much margin you have to work with and evaluate your P&L on a weekly and even a monthly basis.
All right. Well, this has definitely been a strategy field episode. Now, on the personal side, you got married last year, so congratulations. Where was your honeymoon? I was living vicariously through your Instagram honeymoon, but where was it? Wasn't Maldives. Wasn't the Maldives honeymoon.
I know.
Where'd you guys go?
You're going to need to change the name of your honeymoon launch strategy, Bradley. But yes. We went to Italy, and then we ended up in Santorini. So a bunch of different spots in Italy, and then Santorini in Greece was my favorite.
What's some of overall your favorite travel spots? Is that something you do, or was that, you know, do you travel with any kind of frequency, or are you more of a homebody?
Trying to travel more, usually stay stateside, go to Hawaii a decent amount. I can't really get tired of Hawaii. But in terms of some of my favorite places I've been, probably Spain is at the top of the list. So many great places in Europe, but I would say if you haven't been to Santorini, I don't think I'd ever be able to go back. But it is definitely worth a visit.
Speaking of Spain, you got to get Darren to send you in May, probably our next Helium 10 Elite workshop. You know, we do a quarterly workshop, is probably going to be in Madrid in May. So business trip / second honeymoon, bring your hubby along and soak up the nightlife in Madrid and the museum. I like how it's both, you know, like I can hit those like really cool museums and architecture, and you know, they've got good restaurants and nightlife over there. So tell Darren, I'll put in the good word for you. Let's hang out in Madrid next year.
Yeah, we'll put in the good. I will definitely be bringing that one up to him. So thanks for that, Bradley. And then we'll have to make a trip to the Philippines.
Yes. Well, I'm actually going,
are you
soon? Amazon is doing their first event, or not for the, I missed their first event actually in March, but or in February, I should say. But they're actually doing another event in a couple of months. So offline, I'll give you some details. They haven't finalized a date on that. But yeah, their second ever event in Manila. And so there we go. You can go and visit some family too and support the community out there.
There we go. That sounds great. I've been there once, but I definitely need to go back.
Awesome. All right. Well, maraming salamat. Thank you so much for joining us. And it was great to see my sister from another mister right here on this show. And I look forward to being on your show in a couple weeks.